I really didn't know what was going on all around me during the 60s, but that something was going on was crystal clear. There was the establishment, also known as them, and the freaks among who I counted myself at my junior age. So I might not have known exactly what we were about, but I knew exactly what we were against. We were against them. That included my parents and teachers. It was us, and it was against them. And I knew who they were, and I knew whose side I was on. And we were wonderful, I have to admit, we really were. It was inevitable. There had to be a confrontation. There had been occasional flare-ups. Little us against them, violent eruptions here and there, little standoffs. We marched and we protested, and we were marvelous. We were going to win the war. They got the guns, but we got the numbers, right? Wrong. When the confrontation finally came, it was so puny, and we were so ill-equipped to deal with it in Chicago. They hit us, and they hit us hard, and they hit us, and our faith shattered under the impact. There we were with our peace symbols and our slogans and our banners and our songs and our sandals, and they came at us with their army boots and their guns and their tanks and their batons and their tear gas canisters, and they mowed us down. They hit women and they hit children and they hit men and they hit students and they hit long hairs and short hairs alike. They hit all of us. They hit anything that moved, and we did fall. And then they shot us in Chicago. They killed us where we stood. And we were shocked out of our collectiveness. No, I take it back. We were embarrassed out of it. The confrontation came, and in the face of it, we were wimps. When the big moment finally arrived, and there they were, and there we were, we pussied out. They walked right over us, and we let them, because we couldn't fight back, because we lacked the courage and the conviction and the faith. There might have been more of us than them, but the enemy was stronger. The establishment said, okay, we'll make a compromise, but we'll make it on our terms. You can have your long hair and you can have your crazy clothes. You can have your marijuana cigarettes, but you get your candy asses off our streets. We'll end the war, but we'll end it in good time. But it'll be our time, not yours. Now go home. And we went back inside with our goddamn tail between our legs, and it pissed me right off. But nobody wanted any more confrontations. Everybody wanted to let their scars heal. Rest, forget the humiliation, but not Jim Morrison, not him. He'd show him. Nixon got elected, and in front of the whole world, Morrison stood up and called him a fraud. Four more years of this bullshit, he roared. How much more are you people gonna take? He was pissed. He'd do something. The first night of the First Doors national tour, Jim Morrison stood up in a house full of liars and told the truth. He stood on stage, drunk and indignant, in Miami, Florida, and told us exactly what he thought of all of us. You're all a bunch of fucking idiots, he bellowed. Your faces are being shoved into the shit of the world, and you love it. You're all a bunch of fucking slaves. You must like getting pushed around. You must love it. You're all a bunch of idiots. And everyone gasped because Morrison was right and they knew it. The room was still, but Morrison raged. You didn't come here for music tonight. You didn't come here to hear some good songs, to hear some good musicians. You came here for something else. What do you want me to do? And there's always some smartass who will yell out just the wrong thing at just the right time. And this one yahoo screamed out in front of 15,000 people, show us your cock. Morrison was astonished. He blinked into the darkness. Is that what you want, he asked, implying, is that all? Because, see, here's the man ready to nail himself to the cross for us, ready to die for us, to wake us up, and all we want is to see the Lizard King's dingle. We weren't only wimps, we were fools. We didn't deserve Jim Morrison anymore. He wasn't only ahead of his time, we weren't in step with ours anymore. To ask whether or not Jim whipped it out in Miami is irrelevant. It's also stupid. It's besides the whole point. Whatever Morrison did that night in Miami, he did for us, and he was arrested for it, and he went on trial for it. And rock and roll went on trial with him. Now they'll see. Now we'll get some results, I thought. I mean, the man can't bust our music, right? Right. That's the last thing they could touch. It was the last thing they touched, and they put their dirty, pudgy, nicotine-stained fingers all over it. Rock and roll went on trial, and nobody cared. Nobody gave a fuck. Jim Morrison and the Doors fought in court with their own money to change the morality laws and the freedom of expression laws, and nobody came. Nobody listened. It was sickening. It was pathetic. No, apathetic is what it was. As most Doors fans know, Miami was the first and last date on a tour where the rest were either canceled by city, officials are aborted. Each of the Doors escaped, flying to a different island in the Bahamas. Then one at a time, they returned back to Los Angeles to estimate the damage, to try and sort out what had happened. and plot out their next move. Everyone was still having trouble that this had really happened in America. When Morrison came back, he found a warrant issued for his arrest waiting on his desk. He announced he was going to turn himself into the FBI, an act I considered nothing short of heroic. We all braced for the after effects, still having difficulty this was really happening here. Jim hadn't wanted to really tour in the first place. Had this been his way of sabotaging the whole thing? Had his effort worked too well, or had it backfired? Had he let things finally and perhaps irrevocably get out of control? The night of the day that Jim surrendered, I was back at our family house in Westchester, sitting at the dinner table. At dinner, I announced to the gathering how Jim had turned himself in. For what? What'd the freak do this time, my stepfather demanded, since he didn't know how to ask anything nicely. I took a deep breath and, with pride, to the best of my 14-year-old ability, recited charges I only vaguely understood. The misdemeanors were public drunkenness, public profanity, and inciting a riot, I said. And the felonies were lewd and lascivious behavior and simulating masturbation and oral copulation. Those were the felonies. The misdemeanors I sort of grasped, but the felonies really had me quite baffled. I thought simulation meant like a drawing or a cartoon, and I thought oral copulation meant saying fuck, oral meaning mouth and vocal and all. Not in front of the girls, my stepfather yelled, whacking the table, doing the old silverware jump again. He meant his daughters. I didn't know that. Yeah, the girls in front of the boys, the whole audience, the cops too, I said. Young man, you have one filthy mouth and you will leave this table pronto. No, I tried to explain. I didn't say anything. Jim said it. I wasn't even there. As the trial began and the months dragged on, you could see the change in Morrison physically as the realization dawned on him that we weren't simply worth the trouble anymore. We weren't worth the effort or the price. Morrison grew a beard. He put on weight, and the leather pants didn't go back in a closet. They went into the trash this time. Fuck you, he said. You don't deserve the effort. He gave up. He gave up on you, and he gave up on me. But most frighteningly of all, he gave up on himself. And I could do nothing but watch and try and stay out of the way.